And Zig Ziglar, one of the things he said that really helped me was, because I hated selling in the beginning, what Zig Ziglar was at the path of learning how to sell. And then I learned the patterns, I understood it. I became, I guess, the scientist in me, but also the human in me. I like interacting with people. Yeah. But Zig Ziglar said, the people don't understand this, but the secret of selling is transference of passion. Mm. If you're passionate about something, then almost nobody needs to train you.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
Well, good day to you. It's Joel with the King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
Listen up. For such a time as this, we must grow our faith and business muscles. The self-help industry is trying to own spirituality and well-being. The entrepreneurial space is becoming flooded with business pursuits focused on success instead of sustenance. But the only one who can make us fully whole, fully free, and fully alive is Jesus. So I am ecstatic you walked into this hypothetical gym today. I'm your trainer, Tamara Andress, also coined an entrepreneurial rabbi, teaching the pursuits of God, which unveil our purpose and ultimately unleash our desired provision. This FIT acronym is for founders, innovators, and trailblazers. Here, marketplace ministers conversate and educate to build others from the inside out while also sharing their testimonies of endurance. So while it's not a fitness podcast, I do surely care about your mental, physical, emotional, relational, financial, and spiritual health. You're going to hear all about it. If you're passionate about your becoming journey, leading others to greatness, and living a life of abundance and joy, then you're well on your way to being fit in faith. Let's hydrate. Welcome to the Fit in Faith podcast. I am so excited for all of the people who are on live with us already. This is the first official interview of the year, and James got to experience all the tech glitches that go alongside that. So I'm super grateful that he was patient and kind and ready to jump in when it was all put together, and we're so excited to be with you. James, I am just really thrilled that you're a part of this launch of 2024, and specifically knowing that your book was actually ranked the best business book of the year. And so I think just coming into this new year, let's do it again. Let's make it the best business book of this year. It's called Brain Glue, and I am so pumped because you shared pre-roll that there might be a little bit of a different lens in this podcast connected to the book than any other podcast you've been on. And so I'm just looking forward to getting into conversation and to share that with the people who are here live and listening later.
Thank you, Tamara, for having me. I'm very excited. And I'm very excited because, yeah, exactly. I talk about business things and all that stuff. I'm very religious, I believe. I mean, Heavenly Father has changed my life in so many ways. But I learned this technique, and it came from a question. And so here's the question: what do you say to an atheist? And I love this. Do you hope you're wrong? Do you hope life has no purpose? You're a freak of nature, and when you die, you're going to turn to dust? Or do you hope that there actually was something before this? You have a purpose in this life, and then when you die, you're going to move to the next level. You know, whether it be return to Heavenly Father or whatever else, okay? And it's so much, I have this friend that was trying to convince this guy who's an atheist, and he's talking to him, and he's like hollering at him, how can you be, it's like, that doesn't persuade. No. You know, our job is, you know, we want to bring people to Heavenly Father. We want them to understand, you know, he's with us. Our life has a purpose. Why are we living? And when I learned this, the power of this question, I learned this thing that's called redintegration, not reintegration, but redintegration, which is the brain's need for completion. So what's the most powerful tool of human interaction? I'm using it now, aren't I? What am I doing? I'm asking questions, aren't I?
So good. Questions. Number one thing Jesus did too. He has way more questions than he ever did talk.
That's right, exactly. And so I it's a brain pattern.
Yeah.
And so I remember, and here's how I first, you know, after the question, I started exploring reintegration, the brain's need for completion. So I went to the living room. My wife was watching a TV show. And I said, "Oh, wow, is this any good?" She said, "No, it's stupid." I said, "So why are you watching it?" She said, "Well, I want to see how it turns out." You know, okay. They created a problem. We have to see. And so questions work that way too. So here's, I want to share with you and your audience one of the most powerful tools you will ever use. It is so powerful, it will change your life. Are you ready?
Yes.
It's called, and it's changed my life in so many ways. It improved the relationship I had with my wife, with my kids. I have a son and three daughters, four kids. It made it easier for me to sell.
Yeah.
It used reintegration. It used a tool, and it literally changed how I interact with people. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm so excited. I got my pen ready.
Simple reflexive questions. Isn't it, doesn't it, shouldn't it, don't you agree, are simple reflexive questions that you add to the end of your statements, aren't they?
So good.
And when you ask it, I talk to audiences for the Small Business Administration. I'll have like 300 people sometimes or 400 people in an audience. And I'll say, does that make sense? And I'll see a bunch of looks on people's faces like going, oh. I say, okay, well, let me explain this in a different way because I recognize I'm connecting with them. And let me give you an example of how this worked, a couple of examples. But so I'm talking to a friend. I live in Southern California. I lived in Montreal originally, so I moved here because it's a little warmer.
Indeed.
Okay. But that's not, you know, but there are other things. My mom moved here, so I wanted to be with my mom.
Amazing.
But so I said to my friend, it's a beautiful day. I said, it's a beautiful day, isn't it? And he went, yeah. Wow, something's going on there. I said, well, what do you mean? Why? What's wrong? Nothing. He said, well, what? I said, no, it's not a big deal. Just I'm having a fight with my wife. I said, well, why? What's going on? And I got to talk with him about this, all because of simple reflexive questions, because I didn't just say, it's a beautiful day. Hey, isn't this great? I'm saying, isn't this great? Isn't it? This is great, isn't it? And if people go, sure, then going, wait a second, what's wrong? And when you wire it into how you talk, you know, so you're not just talking at somebody, you're engaging with that person. It changes how we interact with people. I mean, I'm amazed how many people are public speakers and don't interact with their audience.
Yeah, completely.
You know,
and I think like really a huge part of the people who are listening in. They're people who have some testimony. They've unlocked an area of expertise, zone of genius. Now they're going out and they're either kidding it in a book like you have. They're putting it in positioning on, you have a TEDx talk that's coming out, right? Or if it's not out already. There's a lot going on that people just want to position that for people. And if it becomes about me, then you actually, I think, lose what the essence was in the first place of you ever saying, hey, this is a message for the magnitude. This is a message for the millions. And it was never about you when you decided to get past yourself to present it. And then when we start talking, sometimes we forget there are people that we're supposed to be engaging with, and we get in our own headspace. You think that that would be like one of the reasons why people are lacking engagement? They're so critical of their own, what's coming out of their mouth?
Well, and we assume people have the same understanding that we have.
Yeah.
Okay. And they don't. Okay, I'm going to give a story. This is actually going to sound very, very bad, but I apologize to the audience right away, but this is going to sound really bad. Okay, but in my book, I start by talking about this, but I'm going to give you the point on this, okay, because it's really profound. So the thing is, this is going to sound really bad. My 4-year-old didn't want to have sex with the boy next door. Okay? Now, this is, as a parent, this happened to me. So I was, okay. So I would say to audiences, and mostly women would say, so what would you say to your child? And they would say, you have to tell her. She has blah, blah, blah. You know, you have all these things and everything else. Here's what happened to me. Okay. So I'm standing by my door, and I heard my child, my daughter, my 4-year-old daughter, our middle daughter, Lauren, talking to one of the neighbors. And the neighbor's, the neighbor boy, I mean, like one of the little kids. And the kid says, do you like Alan, the boy next door? And she says, yeah, I like him, but I don't want to have sex with him. It's like, ah! I'm a parent. What do I say? And at first, I looked at my, I'm a baby. I looked for my wife first. She was nowhere to be found. So I knew I have to go out and be the parent. Okay. So I say to people, what would you say? You know, what would you say to her? And I have people in my audience. This is fun because I have good audiences. So, you know, they'll say, like, you should tell her she shouldn't talk like that or whatever else, you know. Here's what I said. I went out there and it's Heavenly Father gave me the tool, okay? And yeah, I said, hey, Lauren, what's sex? And she said, that's kissing. And I said, yeah, don't do that because you get germs. And I quickly escaped, okay? But the But the point is, if we misunderstand what a 40-year-old is thinking,
right?
Do we misunderstand what 40-year-olds are thinking?
Good.
You know, I mean, we take it for granted that people understand what we're saying all the time, and they don't. So here's something: Brain Glue addresses this whole issue of how does the brain work? Okay, so that when we interact with people, we engage in them in a way that's really powerful. So one of the things we want to do is we want to clarify. And so one of the things that Brain Glue talks about right brain or emotional selling, okay? And I don't mean selling, but persuasion. You know, if you're trying to convince somebody of something, you know, you want to engage with them and engage with their mind. We think people are listening to us, but most of the time they're not, you know? Somebody's sitting there nodding their head and you're going like, oh, wow, isn't this terrible or what? They're thinking, did I forget to turn off the oven at home? Did I leave my windows open? You know, did we just win a client? You know, are my kids okay? You know, I mean, they're thinking of all this stuff while they're listening to us. And so we want to say something that makes sense, like a question would be a good one, that wakes up their brain. They go like, oh, wow. And so one of the things that I learned in this process is that sometimes logic turns off the emotion centers of the brain. And emotion is where we make decisions. So let me give you an example, okay? So I heard this expression, and it goes, 2.5 million Americans discard 2.5 million plastic bottles every hour. Numbers turn off the emotion, by the way. So that, well, that sounds like a lot. Wow, this really sounds like a lot. But what does it mean? I mean, that's a lot. What if I told you that's enough to reach the moon every 3 weeks?
Oh, wow.
What?
Wow.
Okay, wow. You know, we make assumptions that people understand what we're saying, but sometimes we have to clarify. Often we have to clarify. We clarify by first saying, does that make sense? And if they go, yeah, does that make sense? What's up? You know, we're interacting. Okay. Sorry, I'm always stuck on simple and flexible. I mean, it's simple and flexible.
No, it's so good. I think as you're talking, James, there's so many things that are coming to mind. I love that you lensed it from like the stage to the engaged audience perspective. And then I also think that this is happening, especially in the realm of like ministry, in the realm of business and sales. And I think that was one of the things that really drew me into this is like, wow, the power of questions coordinated to sales strategy. And ultimately the person answers and sells and like verifies the exchange before you've ever even really done any quote unquote slimy sales or pitching or anything
right.
simply based on questions. And
right.
my husband honestly is like a phenomenal question asker. I mean, he is teaching my kids who are 9 and 10, ask a question with a question. And so we'll have these practicing around the table and like who breaks the question first simply by having a conversation premised on questions. And it is actually very difficult for me to do. And it
right.
seems to like just roll off of his tongue. And so where's the strategy for us to be able to like come into understanding of this and then to make it, you said, fluid, like the fluidity within the way in which we have conversations?
Well, I love talking. I'm very religious. You know, I'll talk to audiences that aren't, you know, that I'm not going to focus on religion. Although I will tell, I have this great joke. Can I share a joke with you?
Yes, yes.
Because jokes is a brain glue tool too.
That's good, good, good.
So little girl comes up to mommy and says, mommy, daddy says we came from apes, but you say we came from Adam and Eve. Honey, daddy's talking about his family. I'm talking about my family. Okay.
That's great. That's
okay.
So good. It's good though, because now you're bringing somebody in and previously it was non-emotion. It was logic drew them in. Now it's comedy or something that's going to break the ice. So these are two specific ways. Plus obviously the questions, what are some different ways as well more people can engage the Brain Glue concept?
Well, and we want to wake up the brain.
Yeah.
And so I remember I from a business standpoint, I would do turnarounds sometimes where a company, you know, an owner of a company was having a lot of trouble and they were afraid they might go bankrupt or whatever else. And so I was working with this martial arts equipment company. They make, you know, boxing gloves and judo shorts and stuff like that, okay? But he was really concerned. He didn't share with his employees, but they kind of knew that there's trouble. We're afraid that we don't want to lose our jobs. Yeah. So I started with a joke. You know, I'm supposed to be the guy that's going to help them. Okay, we're really serious, right? How about this? So I said this joke. I worked with them for over a year. We really had tremendous success. But a big part of it was the brain becomes more creative and more receptive and better with ideas trigger the brain. And so a joke is a good way to do it. And I'm terrible at joke telling. I told a joke once in front of an audience of 200 people, and they came up and I said, I'm terrible at joke telling. And they would tell me jokes and I would share them, and they would even say, oh, no, you are terrible.
Don't do that.
But it's fine. But people laugh. But here's what the joke I said to them. I said, so the maintenance man is hiding, and this is my head. They're introducing me. I said, oh, my good. Hey, hi, guys. You know, and they're all, life is serious. You know, we're all going to lose our jobs. You don't want to lose our jobs. Okay, hey, let me tell you a joke, okay? So and they're all like, okay. And I said, so the maintenance man is hiding in the maintenance closet. And whenever people would come up to the closet, he would open the door and scream, supplies! Not surprise, supplies. Okay, so maintenance closet. Okay, so over the whole year, this would happen over and over and over again. I would look inside like a window of an office, somebody's inside the office, and I could see stress on their face. I don't know if they were just talking to a customer, they had a problem or something happened or what. And you could just see stress on their face. So I'd knock on the window and open up the door and say, hey. They go, hey, supplies. And they kept torturing me all year with every time they'd see me go, hey, supplies.
I love it. Hey, it ended up sticking though.
Body language.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's
you'd
so
see them
powerful.
Start smiling, and they'd start, but because I needed with this, I needed people to be more creative and more, you know, think of more positive instead of negative. And so it's just amazing how there are tools like that that really make a big difference.
Yeah.
One of the tools I love is when we do a talk, is something called chiasmus, which is a flip, okay? Mm-hmm. So it's like all for one and one for all, okay?
Yeah.
When the going gets tough, the tough gets going, okay? So listen to these. I think these are so good. This is Frederick Douglass, who was in the early days of civil rights and all that stuff.
Right.
He said, it's easier to build strong children than to repair broken men.
Mm.
Isn't that powerful? I mean, it's
so
like,
true.
And it relates. We can relate to that.
Hmm.
This one said, I would rather have questions that can't be answered than answers that can't be questioned.
Ah, that's good.
Okay. I'm old enough to remember it live. President John F. Kennedy said, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. Okay. He also said, mankind must put an end to war or war will put an end to mankind. Okay? So Malcolm X was a civil rights activist. So he was, you know, focusing on it's hard being a black person in America back then and all that stuff, okay?
Yeah.
So he said, we didn't land on Plymouth Rock. The rock landed on us. It's like, huh? Okay.
That's
good. Another one,
which is, good.
A lot of people don't relate it to him, but he said it, and it was, when you stand for nothing, you'll fall for anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that relates to all of us. That's more powerful than saying, hey, come on. You know, if I said, come on, you need to stand for something.
Yeah.
That's not as powerful as if you say, hey, if you stand for nothing, you'll fall for anything.
Because then they would raise their hand to say, what is it that I stand for? Because I don't want to fall for anything. And so it brings you into this integration of self. And most people are concerned, how does this apply to me, right? They're listening about their own ears, their own perspective, their own lens, and then the application thereafter, because no one wants to feel like they've just been ousted in the situation, but it's more of an invitation. And I think that's what faith is, right? Faith is an invitation. And you gave the perfect example in the forefront of somebody like throwing something, the baggage or even the good news on an atheist. They don't even have the conceptualization of what that means. And so that's where the questions, that's where the invitations come into play. And I think it's a chiasma. Is that right? Is that how you say it?
Chiasmus.
Chiasmus. Mm-hmm. Like, that's brilliant.
Yeah. Well, and I love talking to everybody. But I love talking to atheists. I talk to kids sometimes, sort of tell them, here's what you say if you have somebody in school that's, you know, just ask them. Just say, hey, what do you say to an atheist? So I've got this great one I do. I think it's great. And it's, I was talking to this friend, this person I met, and he's an atheist, a devout atheist, okay? So I said, instead of fighting him and saying, how can you be an atheist? You invite him into a conversation.
Right.
Here's what I invited him into. I said, so, yeah, I get it. You know, I believe in Heavenly Father and God that's, you know, with us all the time and the Holy Ghost and all that. But you don't. And I understand that. Said, but so do you believe in the Big Bang Theory? So, yeah, I believe in the Big Bang Theory. So I said, so you got to help me with this because I don't understand this. Okay. So you believe that nothing existed and then something happened to the nothing for no apparent reason, but you think we're nuts.
You know? Okay.
It's like, help me with that because I don't understand.
And it came from nothing and it is nothing and now it's something magnificent. Right?
Exactly. I mean, it created, you know, human dinosaurs and we came from dinosaurs. I mean, like, you think all this happened, but you think we're nuts. I want to just be, help me with that because how could something happen to nothing?
Yeah. Yeah. One of the conversations that my friend likes to ask in context to an atheist is, do you believe in darkness and do you believe in evil? And they always say yes. They always believe in it. And so it's like, okay, so you believe in evil, you believe in darkness. So what is the opposite of darkness and evil? And it's generally goodness and light. And so if there's a construct around that and there is a power behind that, why is there not a power behind light and goodness? And it always stumps them because that's them thinking that there is no God, but there is a God of darkness and evil. And so there has to be a juxtaposition to that and there has to be a truth in that. And so I always find the exploratory opportunity to stick in somebody's mind, whether they decide to have that conversation, whether they decide to go into that invitation that you're saying, it's going to stick. And that's what your science is behind, is the brain glue. It's like, let it stick. Maybe it's not something they can respond to at that point, but are they going to think about it later when they're brushing their teeth or they're falling asleep? And what's that impact look like on them? And so even in a sales cycle, there's a lot of people who want, as a founder, as a coach, as any of these things, they're looking to close the deal. I think about my dad worked as a used car dealer for a long time. People think they're super slimy. My dad is the worst, like the least slimy person. He's the sweetest man ever. And he was a top salesman. And I can tell you that no strategy that he ever possessed was connected to what a lot of people did because it was so invitational. And he would ask questions that would premise them into, I'm going to buy this thing. This is what I came for. This is what I need. And this is exactly why. But he was never pressuring. And so oftentimes people would leave and he would think, oh, I lost that. Or the people around him, his sales buddies would be like, eh, I knew you wouldn't close that one. And he's like, I will, don't worry. And it's like the conversation that then had them considering, wow, it's actually not even just about the car. It's also about the relationship that I just established. And I want to have a long-term relationship with an organization and a company that treats me as such. And so can you share a little bit more about like the overall premise of how these kinds of processes allow people space to make the decision themselves?
So, and this is very important, okay? The first thing you want to establish is a relationship that's positive. You want to set expectation. And the worst expectation you have is you're a salesman. I'm selling it, blah, blah, blah. You got to buy it, blah, blah. I don't care. Okay. So the first question I love asking people is, who don't you want to sell? Who shouldn't be buying your product, you know,
good.
Or service? And be comfortable saying that, you know, this isn't for everyone. I know it's a really nice car if you're selling a car, you know, but this isn't really right for everyone. And so if it's okay with you, can I ask you a few questions so I can get a sense for like what you're looking for and what's really important to you? So I love this. I'm an expert in marketing, supposedly, right? I am because of brain glue and all that. And so I love saying, so Steve Jobs put a camera inside a phone. And I was thinking, who needs a camera inside a phone? Boy, was I used to see my phone, how many pictures I have and videos of my kids and grandkids. And you know, it's like, but by saying that, it makes it. So I started the Father-Daughter Project, that's a Secret Life of Fathers. I wrote a book called Secret Life of Fathers to improve relationships between fathers and daughters. Actually, let me tell you this.
Yeah.
Simple reflexive questions thing, okay? So our middle daughter, Lauren, after she was six, okay, now she's in her 30s.
Yes, she's matured.
Yeah, oh, she has. I hope I have. I said to her one day, I was talking to her and I said, does that make sense? And she was, yeah. And I said, okay, what's wrong, Lauren? And she said, no, it's nothing. I said, no, what? And she explained this thing to me. You've been a consultant all your life and you have no idea what my life is like because I was a quiet one in our family. Mm-hmm. And whenever I would say something, instead of your listening, you would try to solve my problem. Mm-hmm. Do you realize that it's like you're saying, I'm stupid and you're smart. Daddy's smart and you're stupid and let daddy help you solve the problem. Instead of saying, you're really smart, what do you think? Mm-hmm. And tell me what's going on in your life. And so you're so busy trying to solve my problems that you never just be quiet and listen.
Wow.
And it was really, really profound. I mean, for me, and when I did Father-Daughter Project and Secret Life of Fathers, I interviewed more than 100 fathers and daughters. It's funny. And it's amazing how common it is. It's funny how I've had several of the dads that I tried to get closer to my daughter. And like the more I tried, the more I seemed to get further away. And I would ask the question. I was interviewing, so I just wanted to get their feedback. Yeah. I was recording it. But I would ask the question. I said, do you try to solve their problems? Yeah, all the time.
Welcome.
Exactly, gee.
Wow. I listen. Love that. And it's so true. I'm in the book of Job right now. I started the new Bible recap by Tara Lee Cobble. And this will be the second time I go front to back, but this time chronologically. And that's the whole essence of the book is that Job's friend, well, there's lots of elements of the book, but Job's friends are trying to project the reasoning why Job must be in this situation, this terrible, destructive situation. He's lost his family. He's lost his home. He's lost his wealth. He's lost all these things. And they're literally projecting and trying to fix. Well, if you just did this, if you just do this, if you just do this, and it has taught me just in the last couple of days. So I love that we're bringing this to light. How to be a better friend. And oftentimes when we're in the middle of somebody's mess, and sometimes people are buying things because they're in a mess and they're buying them because they're trying to get out of said scenario, whether they have a used car, and we use that example already, and they have a broken car, so they need a new car, or they need something out of a coaching methodology that you have because the other coaches have screwed them over and it hasn't worked out, or they're just ready to get out there. Whatever the situation is, they're usually trying to move themselves from point A, which is an ideal, into point B, which is freedom or hope or joy or whatever that more of thing is. And so I think if we can be better listeners, we can be better question askers, we can be better at some of these things that you're teaching us now, it would go back to the premise of what you said, which is ultimately we would have better relationships. And if we have better relationships, all these things come to play.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
I remember, so when I did the Father-Daughter Project, which I still am doing, I'm trying to improve the relationships between fathers and daughters, but I would be on a lot of interviews and I would start by explaining this. I would be in front of an audience. I would explain this and I would say, I'm supposed to be one of America's leading behavioral management specialists. I ran, you know, one of America's California's leading behavioral management firms, working with the who's who of American business. And then I discovered that my own relationship with my middle daughter wasn't as great as I thought.
Yeah.
And that, you know, it's honest. Yeah. It is honest. But it also makes people trust me more because I'm not blabbing. Oh, I got to tell you this, do this, do this. Here are the five things you have to do and everything else. But they recognize me as a person. I'm human. And I'm saying, no, I'm not perfect.
So good.
You know, but I, you know, I'm trying to be better. I'm trying to be a better dad. And I'm trying to share, you know, help others do the same.
So
and
good.
By saying that, by admitting up front something honest about yourself, it makes it easier for people to trust you. Because, you know, they always say, no, like, trust. Well, we do more than that. But, I mean, you want people to don't artificially know, like, and trust you. You want them honestly to know, like, yeah. and trust you, you know? And if you get to share, when you get to share something that's personal about yourself yeah. and how you got to where you are, you know, I started here and I got, you know, I mean, I could say, Tamara, were you always religious? You know, I mean, I'm just, okay? Nope. And then if you tell, when you tell the story of, like, here's a transition and something happened to me and suddenly,
yeah.
you know, that becomes really powerful to people
really?
Because they recognize you as a human. They recognize me as a human. And it's one of the most powerful tools you have is setting expectation up front. In fact, in my book, I talk about the boxer Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
And he said, I am the greatest.
Yeah.
Okay. And he said, you know who had the greatest impact on? Me.
Mm.
Because if I'm telling the public I am the greatest, I better start thinking it through and being working hard and figuring things out that other people don't figure out, because otherwise they're going to start laughing at me and just humiliate me.
Yes.
And so because he said that, it was, you know, it was important. But for all of us, it's, you know, it's important for us to define. I had this guy who had a shipping services company, okay?
Yeah.
As a franchise. And I said, so who's your ideal client? He said, anyone who ships. I said, I don't believe that. I said, and as I'm talking with him, he says, well, anyone between 5,000 who spends $5,000 to $50,000 a month on shipping. Less than 5,000, it's not that big a deal. More than 50,000, you could probably get a better deal from UPS and from shipping companies. But between 5,000 and 50,000, we can get you shippers. We can get a better price from UPS because they're all, it's all going through us. And so when he started calling people and saying, hey, I'm looking for people who ship between $5,000 and $50,000 a month, he said suddenly it became really, and he was explained because it was more than $50,000 a month, you could probably get a better price than me. It sounded, you know, sounded really good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's honest.
So good.
And people went like, oh, okay. And he said, you can't believe how much easier it is
yeah.
to sell. And it's one of the things I focus on, which is, like your opening pitch,
yeah.
your quick, I call it. Like what in the next in the first 30 seconds, can you say something where people go, So I know this guy because I do work for a small business administration, volunteer work, and I had this
yeah.
guy who contacted me who has a nonprofit,
yeah.
and it's called Life Scholar Project.
Okay,
and what's Life Scholar Project? So he's telling me this. So I said, tell me what you do. Blah 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 blah. And it took 20 minutes before I finally went, oh, that's what you do. And so I created a pitch for him. I said, you need to tell people in the first few seconds what you do. So here's what they did. Life Scholar Project. I helped arrested, troubled kids become invested, stable adults, employed, deployed, and enjoyed.
Wow, let's go.
So what is that? So now I just explained that he takes kids that get in trouble, somehow get arrested,
yeah.
and turn them into kids that actually get a reasonable job and their whole life gets set. Okay. And I was like, how can you not say that to people right up front? So I gave him that pitch. I have a new one. I said, there's a movie. I've never actually seen the movie, but I see lots of commercials for it. Say hello to my little kid or say hello to my little friend.
Right? Yeah.
And I said, let's make that your slogan. Let's say hello to my little friend and show say hello to my little friends.
Oh, that's so good.
And what that's called anchoring, where you're taking
right.
something that already exists and you're anchoring it to something they know. There's actually, I record things off the History Channel,
yeah.
and so they had this guy Bobby Flay, his story, and I'm going, Bobby Flay, kind of sounds familiar. I don't know who he is,
yeah.
and then I realize as I'm watching it, oh yeah, he's a chef, a famous chef, but he came up with the title for his first show that made him a blockbuster. So it's, you know, Boy Meets Girl.
Yeah.
The name of his show is Boy Meets Grill.
Ah, so good. So simple.
And it sticks to the brain because it's already in the brain.
So good. So we just launched another podcast and we did this and without knowing that we were doing that, but we had conversation around it. It's called Girls Gone Holy from Girls Gone Wild. Right?
Yeah, and it's
fabulous. We turn the wild into the wilderness and how there is positivity in being wild for the Lord. And so it's fun for people. They're like, oh, what do you mean? Really? Exactly. Tell me more. And so that's such a cool strategy. I hadn't heard of the language behind it. I love words so much. And a while ago, I was finding myself in the exact same thing of people asking me what I did, and I would explain all the things because there's so many layers and it's so fun and I'm so passionate about it. And they would do the same thing. They're like, wow, that's a lot of stuff, right? And I'm like, man, I totally missed that opportunity. I just talked too much and I didn't ask a question. And so I was telling a friend, my son, who at the time was 9, overheard me sharing that we got a new client. And he was like, people pay you? And I was like, oh no. I was like, yes, people pay me, baby. How do you think I have a business if people don't pay me? He's like, I don't know. I just thought you talked all day for a living. And I'm like, well, I sort of do. What do you think that I sell that somebody could buy? And he was like, words? I was like, technically, as a publisher, yeah, I sell words. Let's go a little deeper. So it's been fun to like play around with that, a child's mind on what makes sense to you. Because if it makes sense to you, and then I can present it to an adult who probably has the same maturity as that child anyway, but yep, isn't able to comprehend the mass amount of influx I can give someone in a 5-minute window, I sell words and envelop that intrigue for someone. Oh my gosh, the conversation goes in so many ways. Because my next question is, they're always like, interesting, what does that mean? Well, what do you think it means? And then it just answer a question with a question. And then you get into this really cool conversation. You're like, wow, you're actually really spot on. And you just gave me a new marketing tactic, in fact. Right? So it's almost field research when you can be better at asking questions and you can process some of the things that you're sharing here. It becomes field research on the response that they give you and then the next steps thereafter.
Right, exactly. And that's why, so Jack Canfield, I shared my book with him and he loves my book, which is really great. I got testimonials from him and stuff like that. But he was telling me his book sold 500 million copies, by the way.
Yep.
I mean, how many people live in America?
Yeah,
he sold 500 million. He sold 100 million. So he wrote a book and it had 101 motivational stories that he believed would change your life. Okay. And he was going to call it 101 motivational stories that will change your life. But he went like, it's too logical. It's not, it doesn't work. He said about a month later, he woke up and he went, chicken soup makes you feel good. It makes you feel better often when you feel sick. My book makes you feel better even if you feel a little sick or depressed. Mm-hmm. So it's chicken soup for the spirit. Yeah. Didn't sound exactly right, but it was close. He said, I like that idea, chicken soup for the spirit. And then he said after about a week of sleepless nights, he realized S-O-U-P is soup, soul, S-O-U-L, sounds better. It's alliteration, a repetition of sound. I suddenly realized Coca-Cola, Best Buy, TikTok, you know, these are all using alliteration. Alliteration is a powerful tool. By the way, you're a person of words. I'm a person of patterns, of word patterns, okay?
Ooh, cool.
That's how it works. But when he came up with chicken soup for the soul, suddenly sales took off and exploded. So here's, I want to show. So they're patterns, okay? Jack and Jill went up the
hill.
Okay. See, pattern. Now, you may have heard that originally, you know, for me, as I heard it like 50 years ago, more than 50 years ago, and I still remember it like it was yesterday. Yep. I'll be on my deathbed and say, hey, James, Jack and Jill went up the hill, the vegetable. I mean, I remember it because it sticks to the brain. So there's a mom and her son in Utah. And they were watching, I guess, Shark Tank, and they really thought, hey, it would be nice for us to start a little company on the side, you know, a side hustle and sell something. And so she, when she goes to the bathroom, you know, she recognizes she has trouble with her, you know, going to the bathroom because of the shape of her body or whatever else it is. And a doctor told her, raise your feet about 6 to 8 inches off the ground when you're going, when you're in the toilet. I don't want to get too into this, but
okay.
It really helps. And she found it really helps. And they said, why don't we create this? This is really cool. Why don't we find somebody to manufacture it for us? I'm not, don't say it yet. And then we'll create and the toilet stool. We'll call it the toilet stool, but the toilet stool doesn't work. I don't think people like the word toilet in anything, okay? Toilet stool. So what are some other words for toilet? Potty. Okay, potty. And I'm kind of squatting. The squatty potty. Let's call it the squatty potty, okay? They went because of the name, okay, because it's a good product, but a lot of people have good products and they still struggle.
Yeah.
They went from zero to $100 million in less than 2 years. These are people who have no business experience. They finally got on Shark Tank and virtually all the investors were standing in line. They wanted to invest, A, because it was taken off, but because it's a name. The name triggers part of the brain. That Squatty Potty is sounding really good. And it explains what it is. It's kind of cool. You know,
so
but
awesome.
it's we never think of that, you know. I mean, John Gray, who did Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, he wrote a fabulous book called Men, Women, and Relationships.
Yeah,
and he was telling me that he was struggling because, you know, people love the book who read it, but only a few thousand people bought it. But when they bought it, they went, oh my gosh, this is such a great relationship book. Oh wow, this is fantastic. By the way, he told me, never tell people you're an expert. He says, I go home, I'm supposed to be an expert in man-woman relationships, and my wife proves me wrong. Always say you're a specialist. Okay, so I'm a specialist, not an expert.
I love it. There you go.
But he was telling me, so he was in an audience. He was in an audience where he was trying to promote the book, and he said something, and all the women started laughing like crazy, and all the men looked at the women and went, what was so funny about what he just said? So he said, see, there are some things that women laugh at and men don't, and some things that men laugh at and women don't, and some things that everybody laughs at. And one of the women said, yeah, it's almost like they're from a different planet. What planet do you think men are from? And he goes, I guess men are from Mars. And everybody started laughing.
Oh,
so when
God.
He got home, he went, well, men are from Mars. Where are women from? I guess women are from Venus. Venus is the god of love.
Yeah.
And he decided, my book isn't selling much anyway. Let's take the same book, change the title to Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, and just put some references throughout the book to it. But keep the same book, but put references to Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus throughout the book. What do you think happened? Almost overnight, 500,000 copies. He couldn't sell a few thousand copies. Suddenly, 500,000 people bought his book, then 1 million, then 2 million. I know this guy, Steve Harrison, who helped John Gray market.
Yeah.
And I say in my book, he sold 10 million copies. And Steve goes, no, he didn't. I said, Steve, I did my homework. He said, no, we're over 50 million copies sold already. He went from 20,000 to 50 million copies sold just because he changed the title.
Wow.
And what did he do? He used a metaphor, you know?
Yep.
I love this metaphor that Warren Buffett uses. Okay. And it is, I mean, you know, so Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus is a metaphor. What's it called? That's chicken soup for the soul is a metaphor. Okay. Warren Buffett loves metaphors. He said, only when the tide goes out do you discover who's been swimming naked. What? Naked is a trigger word, by the way. What? You have this guy, what's his name again? Jamie Oliver, the naked chef. Okay, use a trigger word. Like, naked chef? What?
What's happening? Okay. Yeah.
But only when the tide goes out. So what he's really saying is only when times get tough do you realize who's really competent, you know, who's really capable.
Yeah,
but if he said that, we go, yeah, okay. But by saying only when the tide goes out do you discover who's been swimming naked, it's like, whoa, okay. That's not really the image I want, but okay. But it sticks to the brain.
So good.
It sticks to the brain. It's like,
I can't wait to hear your TEDx because I feel like you're going to put all of these things in it like you just did in this time frame, but in a 7 to whatever landed stage you get, 17-minute window, it's going to blow people's minds because it's ultimately like talking about relationships, it's a guide to connect with people. And it really, even though a lot of your, you know, information is about multiplying your income or being able to persuade and sell so much easier. I think if we look to it in a relational context, like that is the biggest resource that we can have is the true relationships that we have, the true connection. That's an eternal bond that's happening rather than just an exchange of a dollar that's going to change anyway. But it's the remembering of who that dollar came from or who that dollar was given to. And that's what I'm most excited about, even though I know there's going to be a lot of people in here who want it for the sales strategy. I think it's for the connection strategy first and sales gets to follow.
Well, and so you talked about my TED Talk, and here's one of the things they tell me in the TED Talk, which is very, very important. TED Talks used to be 18 minutes.
Yeah.
But now they're 8 to 12 minutes.
So short.
Why? because people have a shorter attention span. And that's why you need to recognize, I'll go back to, you know, my guy with the Life Scholar Project. In the first sentence, you have to help them understand, oh, that's what you do. You know, I help arrested, troubled kids become invested, stable adults, employed, deployed, and enjoyed. You know, say hello to my little friends. Okay. You remember that because, okay. Yeah. But you want to, it's, I just hooked you.
Yeah.
Because of the choice of words and how I put it together. Okay. And we want to understand, we, you know, squatty potty hooks you right away. You go squatty, right. Squatty potty? What's that? It's a little stool, a squatty potty. Okay, so it must be potties. And now you'll stop and you'll look at it and you'll read, you know, what the information is or whatever else. You go, yeah. Oh, interesting.
It's like the poo-pourri.
That's right, exactly. Right?
Like it's so powerful. Right. And it's like funny, but it's also needed. Yeah. And it's like things. And it's just a
How about the pooper scooper?
Yeah, pooper scooper, exactly.
You have a dog, you know what I mean? A pooper scooper.
Oh,
I mean,
gosh.
What do you call it? A dog pickup shovel.
Right, you know? Exactly. It doesn't work. Exactly. Yeah. It's so good. And now I'm going to like literally go around the rest of my day being like, ooh, I've got all these things that I'm going to be paying attention to.
Yeah. People read it and they start wrecking. You start reading, you start seeing it all over the place because the things that are the most successful often have some kind of trigger that understands the pattern of the brain and uses it. Yeah. You know, just one thing on this. So I talked about anchors.
Yeah.
So if you created a shampoo that solves a dandruff shampoo, what would you call it? So here's what Procter & Gamble did. They recognized that every single child knows, I can't even do it anymore. Head and shoulders, knees and toes, eyes, ears, mouth and nose. I can't even do it anymore, okay?
You got it.
But everybody knows that. Why don't we call it head and shoulders?
Good.
No, let's pick something that's already anchored inside the brain and we'll connect to that anchor. And so I have this guy who has... he's a beauty salon hair cutter. Yeah. Okay. And so he said, I want to come up with a really good name for our barbershop. And I said, okay, so let's come up with some words. What are her words? A haircut. Okay. And, what's a word that rhymes with hair? That doesn't rhyme with hair. That's alliteration. It has the same H.
Yeah.
Haircut. Hero. Why don't you call it the haircut hero? And he said, oh, what a, everybody is like, what a great name, the Haircut Hero. That's the name of our barbershop.
I love alliteration.
It's great. So it's when you start to understand the patterns and how they work, you start to realize, wow, this is, and you have fun. You know,
totally.
I love Zig Ziglar. Zig Ziglar changed my life. Okay?
Yes.
And Zig Ziglar, one of the things he said that really helped me was, because I hated selling in the beginning. Zig Ziglar was at the path of learning how to sell. And then I learned the patterns. I understood it. I became, I guess, a scientist in me, but also the human in me. I like interacting with people.
Yeah.
But Zig Ziglar said, people don't understand this, but the secret of selling is transference of passion.
Mm.
If you're passionate about something, then almost nobody needs to train you.
That's good.
You know how, because I saw a movie, Hidden Figures, with the three black women who were at NASA. It's a fabulous movie, and how they, you know, what they had to go through. Like, one of them had to walk to, like, how 3/4 mile to get to the bathroom because it was a black bathroom and she had to go to and stuff like that. It was really fabulous showing what they did. They didn't fight. Instead, what they, you know, it was a really fabulous movie. I love that movie. You don't have to teach me how to sell it. I go, oh, man, this is such a good movie.
Totally.
And the transference of passion helps you. I mean, I believe Heavenly Father is with us every step of the way. You don't have to teach me how to sell, but you do have to teach me brain glue, how to sticky words. You know, what do you say to an atheist? What?
Yes.
I mean, it's like some of those things really help. So you don't have to talk, you don't have to talk for an hour before somebody goes, oh, interesting. But you want to say something that engages them right away. So they go like, oh, squatty potty. Oh, okay.
That's so
boy meets grill.
I love it. I love it. I want to start writing them all down. I love words, and I keep like content in my note section all the time. And so helping people understand this is like almost fundamental business. It's fundamental business building. It's book writing. It's speaking engagements. It's all the things that I do from a messenger's perspective, naming your podcast, right? Something as simple as that is like, what is it called and how does it have a play on words for other people to understand? You heard at the forefront of mind, a lot of people assume that my podcast is about fitness because it's Fit in Faith. Now it's an acronym. So if you like acronyms, you can look in further. But for a long time, it wasn't an acronym. So you had to tune in to understand that it was fitness around mind, body, spirit journey in order for you to understand that it's all paralleled. But there's some really good podcast titles, book titles, all of that, that allow us to go into that exploration of, man, they were really smart and they really put consideration into it rather than just trying to go with like the one thing that you think is going to be, oh, it's an aha. But really the sticky piece is the thing that I'm focused on often. And now I have this new resource with the Brain Glue book by James Bond. Yes, the James Bond, the real one.
I think my parents had a sense of humor. What can I say?
I love it. It's so good. But to be like supported by Jack Canfield, I love Mark Victor Hansen, his co-author in many of the Chicken Soup books. Yeah. And so you guys got to get your hand on this book. And surely follow James in all the places. I feel like you should have the most viral social media of anyone I know based on the hooks that you probably could curate for people to get sucked into what is it that you're about to say. But really, truly, I appreciate you being on the show today, teaching us so many tips, tricks, and tips, all the above. James, is there any specific thing that you want to share with the audience besides obviously the book? They have all the show notes with links for that. Anything that is spaces in which they can get connected with you further?
Well, for me, I think it's simple, reflexive questions. Try it, you know, go around, you know, pick somebody in your family and just talk with them, asking questions. You got it with your husband saying, you answer a question with a question. Okay. But just, can you talk for 15 or 20 minutes just with questions?
Good.
And isn't it, doesn't it, shouldn't it, don't you agree? It changed my life. It's changed so many people's lives. Simple reflexive questions, but it's engaging us much more than we engage normally.
I love it.
You know,
doesn't it? Say it slower.
Isn't it? Doesn't it? Shouldn't it? Don't you agree?
Don't you?
Our simple reflexive questions, aren't they?
Aren't they? So good. I love it. Man, James, I've learned so much. I haven't probably taken this many notes in a podcast in a really long time because I'm usually just listening to people's stories. And I love how seamless you are in sharing stories while also sharing your specialty, not your expertise, but all the above. I'm grateful for you and excited to see how the book continues to serve people long into the future. Let's go for that 500,000, 500 million copies sold, right? Thanks, brother. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Tamara, so much. I love your podcast. And thank you. Thank you for having me.
Be blessed.
You too.
Hey y'all, it's me again. Before you go, let's solidify the flame that was ignited within you today by sharing the spark with your own community. Whether it's mentally, physically, emotionally, relationally, or spiritually, I would love for you to take the step right now by declaring your takeaway. Snap a pic of the episode and share it on your stories or posts, and you can tag me and the guest, and we will surely feature you on our Instas. Hey, you may even unlock a new accountability buddy in me or them. We're totally in this together and we appreciate the extra step taken. I would be so grateful if you even took the extra step. Come on, give me that extra sauce and leave a review on iTunes for the podcast listening app that is of your choice. I'm going to be featuring your thoughts, in fact, and it's going to be so fun in upcoming episodes. So you'll not only hear your name on the show, but maybe even your passion project or whatever big shout out you want me to make. So please, as a fellow writer, leave some words that I can attest to, and I can't wait to read what you have to say. Thanks again for being a loyal listener, and I hope to meet you in person soon at one of the events that we are speaking at or hosting. And I say we because the Fit and Fake team could not do this without you. Until next time, blessings over your joy, health, wealth, and wholeness. This is the Fit and Faith Way. I want to take just a second to thank the team at Life Audio for their partnership with us and this podcast. If you go to lifeaudio.com, you will find dozens of other faith-centered podcasts in their network, which is obviously why we got connected and are so grateful to be a part of the community. They have shows about prayer, Bible study, parenting, and more. Some of mine that I listen to on a regular basis are on Life Audio. Even some of our community members who have been a part of the Fit and Faith team through our coaching or different organizations, they're there too. So I definitely want to drive you over there, check it out, and thanks again, Life Audio, for being you.
Dear Heavenly Father, thank you for working everything out for my good. Help me trust in your perfect plan. Amen.
Father, thank you for loving and caring for me.
With Christian prayer meditation, you can pray along to prayers based on specific topics. Go to lifeaudio.com or search your favorite podcast app for Christian prayer meditation. You can also download the Abide app for biblical meditations at abide.com.